Welcome back to the Dealmakers Podcast Show with serial entrepreneur Alejandro Cremades, best-selling author of The Art of Startup Fundraising and co-founder at Panthera Advisors. In this podcast, we ask our guests about their successful acquisitions and financing rounds.
Alrighty, hello everyone and welcome to the Dealmaker Show. So today we have a really amazing founder. A founder, you know, where we're going to be learning about the good stuff of building, scaling, financing. You know, in their case, they've raised $290 million. And we're going to be talking about the early life, you know, with them, you know, especially with this founder. Also how they had close calls, you know, of almost going out of business, you know, especially right before they did a pretty significant pivot. And then also how to think about scalable business processes, value proposition, and all of the good stuff. So without further ado, let's welcome our guest today, Viraj Parekh. Welcome to the show.
Hey, great to be here.
So originally, you know, born and raised in New York, but parents from India. So you're one of the first generations, you know, here of the American dream. So give us a walk through memory lane. How was life growing up for you?
Yeah, something like that. So, you know, my parents immigrated over in very, very late 80s. And I grew up about 90 miles north of New York City, in a small town called Wappingers Falls, New York. And, you know, it's a very classic story. I have a very large family, very working class. And I've always been super lucky, you know. My family gave me not only a lot of emotional support and love, but also everything I needed to, you know, focus on school. And I had a bunch of family members who also taught me how to use a computer at a very young age, which obviously sparked an interest that's carried me into today.
Amazing. So then talk to us about, you know, how was, you know, for you when, you know, all of a sudden you decide to become a student, you know, in BC, you know, and all of that good stuff, you know, when it came to mathematics and computer science, how did you get into computers, you know, to begin with?
Yeah. So lucky enough, I had a couple of older cousins who were getting jobs in the software industry. And one of them actually bought me my first computer because he was staying with us for a summer when he was finishing up school. And as a thank you gift, he bought me a computer, which was very, very generous of him. And, you know, just in terms of having something to do with my spare time, you know, when you're young, you just want ways to, you just want to be fascinated by something. You can go a long way with being a fifth grader, having a ton of time on your hands and an internet connection. And that really got me interested in technology. And thankfully, I was in a place where I had friends who were interested in technology and math and computer science as well, which eventually carried me to go to school in Boston at BC. And when I was there, you know, I really got interested in early stage technology companies via a couple of courses and seeing some entrepreneurs talk on campus. It really got me interested in trying to see what would like to work in an early stage startup and work at an early stage company.
So then let's talk about you getting into the world of, you know, the labor world, no? Because, I mean, you did, you know, working with early stage companies, also private equity. I mean, quite a few different, you know, stints, you know, before you actually came up with the idea of pushing for astronomers. So what were those sequence of events for you?
Yeah, you know, I wish I could say I had a plan and I followed the plan and worked out that way, but it was anything but that. So I didn't really know what exactly I wanted to do when I was in undergrad. I thought I would go down the finance route in some capacity. And then after just doing a couple of things in the summers and so on, I realized that like what I really just wanted to do was get experience at an early stage company. And I was very lucky to find a fellowship called Venture for America that, you know, at the time, what it was doing was it was connecting folks in who are about to graduate college with startups that weren't based in New York or California, right? As a way to get folks to go to different parts of the country. It was through that I found a company called Astronomer based in Cincinnati, Ohio. And when I joined, I was actually the fifth employee, right? We were kind of puttering along doing something. What had happened was we ultimately, sorry, can I say that one more time? I kind of messed up a little bit. Yeah. So I didn't really know exactly what I wanted to do. I had done a couple of things in the finance realm. I'd taken some courses in math and computer science. And ultimately, I decided that I wanted to get exposure at an early stage company. You know, I felt like that would be the environment where I would learn the most. So I was lucky enough to find a fellowship program called Venture for America that connected recent grads with startups that weren't based on the coasts. So via Venture for America, I moved out to Cincinnati, Ohio. And, you know, that's kind of where my astronomer journey began.
So let's talk about the astronomer journey beginning. How did that all happen?
Yeah, you know, it's another one of those things that I wish I could say that there was a plan around and it went exactly to plan, but it was really, it was a bit of a twister to say the very least. So when I joined Astronomer, we were building a product that was helping with marketing analytics. And to power the back end of this product, we started looking at a lot of different open source technologies. And the folks at Airbnb, which at the time was known as one of the leaders of building great data technologies and giving it and open sourcing it, had put out this tool called Apache Airflow. And we actually started using Apache Airflow to power the back end of our other product. It was a product that helped you get clickstream data into your data warehouse. And through doing that, we got really good at running and scaling Apache Airflow. You know, I'll fast forward a little bit. And what ended up happening was our clickstream product was pretty good, but it wasn't really enough to sustain us. And we had a couple of near-death experiences as a company. But this funny thing would happen where we would talk to customers about how our clickstream product worked. And we'd say, hey, it's powered by Airflow. And then they would say, oh, wait, like, let's talk about Airflow. You know, that looks really exciting. Are you guys using it? How are you guys using it? And so on and so forth. Customers would be fascinated by it because at the time, Airflow was going viral. So, you know, we got really involved in the greater Apache Airflow community. We started committing a lot of code back. And then we actually restarted the company and pivoted really hard to become the Apache Airflow company, really just focusing on building the best possible orchestration platform around Apache Airflow.
Eventually, you guys, you know, at the beginning, you ended up doing a pivot that kind of like saved the company. So what was that journey like to getting to the point where, hey, I think we need to make a switch here. We need to change things around. Otherwise, we're going to be in trouble.
Yeah. You know, I think it was really just a function of listening to customers. A lot of times customers are going to tell you things that you don't want to hear, things that aren't very, very easy to hear, but ultimately are in your best interests. And it turned out that the way we were building our clickstream product was actually more interesting to customers than the product itself. And what they really wanted to do was leverage the underlying technology, Apache Airflow, for their own needs. So instead of bringing it to them behind the walls of something else, they wanted the underlying technology itself. And, you know, thankfully, we had some really smart people around the table. We had some really forward-thinking folks. And it was definitely a gamble at the time to go all in on Airflow. But I would say it's paid off pretty well.
So let's talk about the business model. What ended up being the business model today? How do you guys make money?
Yeah. So Astro is the best place to run Apache Airflow. We have a managed service that lets you use Apache Airflow without dealing with any of the undifferentiated heavy lifting that comes with adopting open source technology. We let data teams build, run, and observe their data pipelines better than any other solution in the market.
So in terms of, you know, really listening to customers, I mean, you talked about it earlier, you know, as part of that pivot experience. You know, I find that most founders make the mistake of building stuff based on assumptions versus based on data, right? And I think that was one of your biggest, lesson, right? Especially at the beginning, to be able to get it right and to adjust to what the market was asking you for. So I guess, what are some of the things that maybe you can share with the people, you know, that are listening on how to get it right, how to get to product market fit, and how to listen to your customers in order to get there?
Yeah. You know, so the way I'll tell the story is, like, when we first decided to pivot to Airflow, we just wanted to give people an Airflow service so they would give us money so we could make payroll and just, you know, keep revenue rising. But as we started actually doing that and we asked the question, hey, why is this important to you? What are you doing with this? What happens if this breaks? We actually learned a ton about how important orchestration is to companies and why it's so valuable to them. Orchestration was the path to production on how companies got business value from their data. You know, it's how they took an insight that happens in a vacuum and turned it into a process that runs every day or every hour or anything else of the sort. You know, it doesn't matter if you needed to create a dashboard for the CEO or deliver a data set to an external vendor or even some sort of machine learning model that did something like predict customer churn. Didn't matter what that data-hungry business process is, the way you actually bring it to life and start to get business value is via orchestration. That became very clear when we asked our customers, hey, why are you paying us? You know, why is this important to you? Why are you looking for managed service here? And, you know, what we learned was that Airflow was definitely the best underlying technology for data orchestration. You know, it has the biggest community of users in the entire Apache Software Foundation. But Airflow wasn't always easy for everybody, right? It could be a little bit hard to learn. It's hard to scale out if you're trying to be multi-tenant on Airflow because you have a large number of data users in your company. That wasn't always easy, and you'd have to invest your own resources into making that happen. We wanted to build something that was an easy button for Airflow, right? To make it so that we could democratize access to orchestration for companies that didn't have huge engineering teams behind them to build this tooling themselves. And even those companies that have huge engineering teams behind them, you know, they don't want to invest in getting really good at learning and building open source technology. You know, they want to invest in doing things that are aligned to business value. So what we found was that, hey, no matter what a company is trying to do with their data, right? Be it some sort of large language model process, or be it some sort of like your classical dashboarding use cases, you need an underlying orchestration platform to bring it to life.
So then let's talk about raising money, because you guys have raised $290 million, which is quite the amount. What was the journey to of going through the motions and raising the money, going from one financing cycle to the next, unlocking the next life cycle of the business? How was that experience and that journey like for you guys too?
It definitely wasn't easy, especially early on. When you say that you are an open source software company that's based in Cincinnati, it was founded in Cincinnati, Ohio, that's not typically the thing that you hear. What I can say is that as it was clear to the market how viral Apache Airflow is and how huge the community of users is and how essential it is to doing anything with data, that process ended up getting a whole lot easier. Thankfully, we had some people around the table who had done it before, who knew exactly how to tell our story in those settings. And, you know, the number on paper looks very, very impressive, $290 million fundraising that much. You know, that's such an impressive number. But I think what really gives me pride is the value we've brought to customers. Customers telling us that, like, hey, if this went down, my company's at risk of getting sued by regulators. Or somebody saying, like, hey, this helped us hit our Q4 target all the way back in Q3. Totals around fundraising, they're nice to talk about. They're huge numbers, but it's not a goal you should over-index on. The real thing that matters is your customers telling you how important your product is to their day-to-day.
Hey, guys, so pardon the interruption here. So I got to tell you that, you know, for those of you that are either looking to raise money or you're looking to get your company acquired, you don't have to be alone. You know, there's a lot of psychology that needs to be blended with strategy, with methodology, with process. And it's very hard. And already doing your business alone is super, super difficult. So I remember, you know, back then when I was an entrepreneur, I kept really experiencing the challenge of either knowing or finding the right type of access to the right type of investors, or really understanding what was the right type of guidance, you know, that would carry me through the process, whether it was with seeking money or with going through the acquisition. So that gap that I found being an entrepreneur is ultimately what pushed me later on, when I met my co-founder at Pantera, Mike Severson, to really put together an advisory firm where we are guiding entrepreneurs and founding teams through the capital raising efforts, whether you are at a seed stage or at a Series A stage, or if you are going through the process of an acquisition and you are in small to mid-cap type of cycle. So again, you know, we would help you from guiding you and supporting you from A to C all the way to the end as an extension of your team. And there's no reason for you to do this alone. So with that being said, if you would like to find out more, feel free to send me an email at alejandro@panteraadvisors.com. And we would love to take a look at helping you out. So then let's talk about then, you know, on the vision side of things, no? Because when you're raising this amount of money, you know, it's because obviously investors are betting on you. They're betting on the vision. So I guess if we're thinking about the vision here and we're thinking about, let's say you going to sleep tonight and waking up in a world where the vision of Astronomer is fully being realized, what does that world look like?
Yeah, you know, that's such a great question. I would say there's really two buckets of that. Number one is, it has been so far, and I'm hoping that it's always going to be this way, that we're a great place to work. We're a place to work, Astronomer's place to work that, you know, it's not always easy, but it surrounds you with good people who are smart people who will both challenge you to learn more, but also motivate you when something didn't work out the way you wanted it to. And it's really important to me to build a company that brings out the best people. Right? You hear stories about the Stripe Mafia or the PayPal Mafia or all these other companies that have churned out these great entrepreneurs. I really think Astronomer can be one of those. That's always going to be something that's very, very important to me. As far as the vision goes, you know, we want to make sure that any data professional can put their pipelines into production in a very easy way. As far as the product vision goes, right, it's really about making it so data teams can work better than ever without focusing on things that aren't directly related to getting value out of their data.
In that regard, too, as you guys are now like in growth stage mode, how was that experience too of or that opportunity of now going from early stage to growth stage? And when you're thinking about being now at a growth stage, how do you guys think about scale? How do you guys think about business processes and doing stuff around data and really being able to turn that wheel faster, not by throwing more people, but by building technology and other good stuff around it?
Ideally, you could always do things in a scalable fashion, right? Ideally, it's like you say a problem and you're like, hey, this is going to come up again. Let's just solve this in a vacuum. Unfortunately, that's not always the case. The way we think about it is like the most important thing is our customers have a great experience. You know, it doesn't matter if that has to happen manually or we can automate the process in some capacity. So a lot of times, you know, you can look at what has to be done manually to give customers a great experience and then take a step back and say, hey, how important is this to automate? Because when you're growing really quickly, there's 1,000 fires every day, right? There's a bunch of things you can do if you have the time for, but you just don't have enough time or people to it. So for us, it's about working backwards from the customer experience and thinking about, hey, what do we just need to do regardless of how it gets done? And then after that, the most important and urgent thing being like, okay, what do we scale out? Because we don't have enough people hours to do it in the day.
And then on the corporate structure too, I mean, when you go into the growth stage side and now you've raised all this money, how do you think things change as the company is now becoming more of a robust corporate structure?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think one thing you have to get used to is just there's going to be new people around the table and they'll be really smart and they'll come from really interesting backgrounds, but things change really quickly as a startup. So that underlying context of why things are the way they are or the nuance around the particulars of an industry or something, I think it's really important to make sure that everybody knows that because it just makes it easier for folks to get productive quickly. The other thing you have to make sure is that it's more important than ever to know how the company is spending its money. You know, we saw it during COVID that a lot of startups grew really quickly and a lot of folks started overspending. Because being disciplined is harder when you're further along, but it's more important than ever.
And where would you say that the Astronomer right now falls when it comes to value proposition? You know, where does Astronomer fall in the market when it comes to value proposition?
If putting data pipelines in production is important to you, if you're trying to innovate with data and you're trying to make sure that you're building a data platform for your company that can change with the times, orchestration is a foundational piece of that. And there's no better way to do orchestration than Astro.
How big is the team now of Astro? You know, how do you guys go about culture?
Yeah, so we're in the ballpark. We're over 250 people today, growing very quickly. And culture is one of those things that, you know, you can say a lot about, but it really matters more in what you do than what you say about it.
What does culture look like at Astronomer?
From people that have worked here, right? I'm obviously biased around that because I've been here for so long. But what people that come work here say is it's the most collaborative culture at a company they've ever worked at, right? One thing that I take a lot of pride in is that nobody is ever tasked with solving a problem alone at Astronomer. Everybody is competent and focused, but if you need help, if you ask for help, you're never going to be turned down, which I think is a really core tenet of what's gotten us to where we are today. More importantly, what's going to get us to where we want to go.
So obviously you've been at it now for about 8 years, over 8 years with the company. And, you know, 8 years, you know, at a startup is a tremendous amount of time. I guess the company that, you know, you started, you know, here is a different company today. I guess to be able to go at the same pace of growth personally, you know, and professionally with the business as the company has taken on, which is incredible with all this money raised, all these employees. How do you think you've been able to keep at the same pace of growth with the business?
You know, I think one thing to think about on that is startups are a great place to grow very quickly, but growing very quickly is very hard and it doesn't happen linearly. So it tends to happen in bursts anyways, right? You're going to have to struggle with something for a little while. You'll get some help. You'll think about it really hard and then you'll kind of spike up growth. I think based on my experience, the most important thing around growth is curiosity and just learning how to approach things with general curiosity. startups are very difficult and you're going to go through a lot of ups and downs. You know, like one day you'll have somebody leave that you didn't expect to leave. Another day you'll get a great hire you didn't expect to get. One day you're going to have a bunch of really happy customers, and another day those same customers are going to be really angry for something that you did or didn't do. And all of that, you're going to have emotional fluctuations, right? Because it's only human. When something bad happens, it sucks. And when something great happens, it's awesome. I think the most important thing is, as you experience these emotions, it's important to take a step back and ask why and keep a curious mindset into a lot of things. Because if you just get wrapped around the axle of something, you're not going to make any progress on it. But if you can kind of have an intellectually honest conversation with yourself and just be curious about an outcome or curious about something not so great that happened, that's really the only way to learn and keep getting better. It's just to approach those things with genuine curiosity in spite of whatever emotional reactions they may or may not cause in the moment.
So let's say now I'm able to put you into a time machine, and I put you in a time machine that brings you back in time, you know, maybe to 2016. And you're able to have a conversation with that younger self, that younger Barash, and you're able to give that younger Barash one piece of advice for launching a business. What would that be and why, given what you know now?
Yeah. So I'll reemphasize the piece on learning to approach your feelings and things with genuine curiosity. It's one of those things that's kind of cliche. It's very easy to say, but hard to do. But I think that'd be the biggest one. I think in a more practical setting or a more kind of real world thing, learning to be a really effective communicator, both in a written format and in a oral format, at least for me anyways, it's something that I only got any sort of skill at by doing it over and over and over and over. So I think really focusing on that and practicing written and verbal communication, I think that really does set people apart when they can be exceptional communicators.
So then for the people that are listening, Barash, that would love to reach out and say hi, what is the best way for them to do so?
Yeah. So please feel free to shoot me an email. You know, I'm Barash@astronomer.io. That's probably the easiest way. I love talking about all things data and early stage startup.
Amazing. Well, easy enough. Well, hey, Barash, thank you so much for being on the Dealmaker Show today. It has been an absolute honor to have you with us.
Yeah, thanks. I did just want to give a last shout out to the rest of the early founders at Astronomer. I feel very lucky to be here on this podcast with you, but all of them are just as qualified to talk about the Astronomer journey as I am, if not more, and working with them has been the pleasure of a lifetime.
If you like the show, make sure that you hit that subscribe button. If you could leave a review as well, that would be fantastic. And if you got any value, either from this episode or from the show itself, share it with a friend. Perhaps they also appreciate it. So also remember that if you need any help, whether it is with your fundraising efforts or with selling your business, you can reach me at alejandro@pantheraadvisors.com.
You've reached the end of another episode of the Dealmakers Podcast. For free resources and materials, head over to alejandrocremades.com. Thank you for listening, and see you at the next episode.